Conversations on Food Security and Development. This is a podcast by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations.
Majesté, Mesdames, Messieurs les chefs d'État et de gouvernement, Monsieur le Secrétaire général des Nations Unies, Mesdames, Messieurs les chefs de délégation, Excellences.
Two decades have passed since the 1996 World Food Summit in Rome. At the time, then Director General of the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, Jacques Diouf, addressed a room full of ministers, international delegates, those who influence policy, and those who advocate for policy change. He said, "It is intolerable that more than 800 million people worldwide, and particularly those in developing countries, do not have enough food to meet their basic nutritional needs." 4 years later, when that target was seen to be too ambitious in the face of a fast-growing population, a second target was established with the Millennium Development Goal hunger target. This new goal was to reduce the proportion of people suffering from hunger by 2015. Now, a monitoring period of nearly three decades is coming to a close, and this year's State of Food Insecurity report released by the UN's three Rome-based food agencies, the Food and Agriculture Organization, the International Fund for Agricultural Development, and the World Food Programme, has taken stock of the international community's progress in the fight against hunger. In today's special FAO podcast, we ask FAO experts how much progress has been made in the fight against hunger, what were the factors that shaped that progress, and where do we go from here? To begin, I spoke with Piero Conforti, FAO senior statistician, about the difference between the World Food Summit target and the Millennium Development Goal hunger target. What were the MDG targets and indicators versus the World Food Summit targets and indicators?
It's pretty simple. The World Food Summit talks about numbers, okay? So the target is defined in terms of number of people who are undernourished. Say if you have in the starting period, which is 1990-92, 100 people who are hungry, you have to reduce this number to at least 50, okay, one half, by year 2015. The Millennium Development Goal hunger target is a bit more complex because it's defined in terms of percentage of people in the population. It means that if in the starting period, 1990-92, you have 30% of the population who is hungry, you should, by year 2015, bring down this percentage at least to 15%. Now, the difference between the two objectives is essentially how we treat the population. Okay, if you look at the absolute numbers, as the World Food Summit goal does, you have to factor in that population may increase, as it actually happened during the period. Whereas if you look at the MDG side, the percentage, of course, is different. So we look at a share in the population with the Millennium Development Goal. We look at the absolute numbers with the World Food Summit. What happened is that, in fact, the World Food Summit goal turned out to be more ambitious and more difficult to achieve, essentially because between 1990 and today, world population has increased by and large by 2 billion. So we have 2 more billion people on the planet. Hence, reducing the number becomes more difficult because some of these 2 billions might actually be part of those who are hungry. So we need an additional effort.
So did we reach the target?
If you look at the crude numbers, the MDG was globally almost reached, just because you're a few percentage points away from the actual target. Of course, if you take a wider perspective, so you want to look at the numbers, but at the same time interpret them. If you get as close as few percentage points, and if you factor in the degree of uncertainty, you should conclude, as we do, that the target was achieved.
According to the SOFI report, the world now has 216 million fewer people suffering from hunger than in 1992. Taking into account the growth in population by 2 billion, better country statistics over the years from developing countries, and a suite of other factors, global hunger reduction continues. But the world still has 795 million people estimated to be chronically undernourished. Approximately 1 in 9 people still suffer from hunger on our planet. The SOFI report explains that the global number of hungry has gone down, It's gone down for many reasons, part of which include higher levels of food consumption and less inequality in terms of people's access to food. But where were those reductions in hunger made? In which countries? In what regions? Pietro Gennari, chief statistician and director of FAO's statistics division, gives us a brief overview.
We have had very successful regions that have been able to meet both the MDG and the WFS target. This happened in Eastern Asia, in Southeastern Asia, and in Latin America overall. Other regions like Caucasus or Northern Africa achieved the Millennium Development Goal target, but not the World Food Summit target. A group of other regions like South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa made too slow progress in order to achieve the MDG target. And lastly, one specific region, Western Asia, in reality has now more undernourished than had in 1990, so moved away from the target.
When looking at the numbers at the national level, 72 developing countries have achieved the MDG-1 hunger target. Of these countries, 29 have achieved the more ambitious World Food Summit target. According to the analysis, the factors that drove the progress towards food and nutrition security are economic growth, agricultural productivity, markets, including international trade, and social protection. George Rapsomanikis, a senior economist with the Trade and Markets Division at FAO and one of the authors of this year's SOFI report, explains.
This year, in 2015, is the end of the monitoring period for the MDGs, and in this SOFI, we look at a number of factors that have enabled progress towards food security and nutrition goals. Economic growth is a necessary but not a sufficient condition for alleviating poverty and reducing hunger. The richer a country is, the less susceptible it is to food insecurity. But this is a general rule, and the relationship between economic growth and hunger is complex. For example, looking at the numbers during the last 25 years, one can see that poverty alleviation was much faster than hunger reduction. Inclusive growth should reach the extremely poor, and social protection is another mechanism to promote inclusive growth. It increases incomes and it raises the demand for labor in the rural areas, and it generates jobs for the poor, and most importantly, it raises the unskilled labor wage, the wage that the poor are dependent on. A good example for this is Ghana, where good policies and investments in agricultural productivity have resulted in significant reductions in hunger.
Is there any other way to promote inclusive growth?
In the last decades, we have seen a significant increase in social protection mechanisms in terms of coverage. And today, every country in the world has at least one social safety net program. For example, school meals, it is the most widespread type of social protection program. They are implemented in about 130 countries. Social protection contributes to poverty alleviation and hunger reduction directly. With cash transfers, the extremely poor can have the necessary income to buy food. But it is also key in shaping inclusive growth. For example, cash transfers can influence the productive capacity of farmers, and particularly women that have no access to financial services such as credit. So with cash transfers, they can make the necessary investments in their households. There are other social transfer programs that are combined with interventions in the areas of health, education, and drinking water, and this can enhance human capital and nutritional outcomes.
The report also discusses food security in areas of protracted crisis, which limited the capacity of some countries to achieve the MDG 1 hunger target. What were the highlights of that analysis?
Conflicts are increasingly the main underlying cause for protracted crisis. In 1990, only 12 countries in Africa were facing food crisis, out of which only 4 were in protracted crisis. And 20 years later, we have a total of 24 countries that face food crisis, with 19 countries in crisis for 8 or more of the previous 10 years. Food insecurity can be both the cause and the result for protracted crisis. Food insecurity can be an exacerbating factor for conflict or the result of conflict. And very often, the impact of conflict on mortality rates due to hunger can be more dramatic than the direct impact of war. Protracted crises undermine food security and nutrition in many ways. They affect the availability, access, and utilization of food. For example, they disrupt crop production, livestock rearing, and trade. People's access to food is frequently affected in crisis because of displacement, disruption to livelihoods, or when land is taken from them.
Efforts towards the reduction of poverty by the international community over the course of these 25 years has weighed these factors and placed them against the indicators by which to measure hunger reduction. But was that enough? Were the indicators accurate markers for measurement? FAO nutritionist Anne Keppel explains.
I think speaking specifically of FAO's indicator of hunger, which is the prevalence of undernourishment, I have the impression that that contributed to building statistical capacity at the country level through collaborative work between FAO and national governments. And then finally, certainly the MDG monitoring period offered us opportunity to observe trends over time, over the past 25 years, in countries and in regions, and to reflect on what may be influencing those trends, which is really the most important thing, and also reasons for observing divergent trends or deviations from what you might expect.
Do you think these targets and goals in this monitoring period ultimately assisted the international community?
Yes, I do. I think that it definitely gave visibility. I mean, I think I will probably speak most specifically to the hunger development goal, the one related to hunger, because it really gave visibility to hunger and put it on the global agenda. I also think it did help to strengthen political will. I have been living in Brazil for 20 years and really could see it was very visible that to the Brazilian government and to the media, it was on the agenda, and it was important to the government to be able to say that they achieved those goals. And it was important to the media to hold the government responsible for meeting those goals.
Now back to Chief Statistician Pietro Gennari. How will this analysis affect discussions around upcoming decisions regarding the new Sustainable Development Goals?
The SOFI report is an important document that will be used to inform the discussion that will be held in New York at the General Assembly, where the new Sustainable Development Agenda will be discussed and endorsed. We expect the Sustainable Development Agenda to be much more ambitious in terms of food security and nutrition than the Millennium Development Agenda. We will have a separate goal for food security and nutrition. There will be targets for food access, for eliminating malnutrition in all its forms, and important targets also on increasing agricultural production sustainably. So it will be much more comprehensive than the Millennium Development Goal.
With the close of the Millennium Development Goal monitoring period, this has been a special FAO podcast.